Welcome to Latinos Who Tech. My name is Hugo Castellanos. I'm an engineer and I work in Silicon Valley. I am originally from Caracas, Venezuela, and I've been calling the U.S. home for the last 20 years. When it comes to Latinos in the U.S., we are 60 million people, but we're only 3% of the workers in science or engineering. As a professional in Silicon Valley, I've had the opportunity to meet some remarkable professionals that work in the tech industry, Latinos like me. With this podcast, I want to bring you a collection of their stories and how they got a job in tech in the first place. And if they had to start all over again, what would they do differently? I want to share with you career advice on how to get a job in tech, how to deal with imposter syndrome, how to find your tribe when you're the only one in the room. This is Latinos Who Tech. Frances Coronel, welcome to Latinos Who Tech.
Cool. Happy to be here.
Tell me your story. Where do you grow up? How do you get to San Francisco?
I was born in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia. So that's basically Norfolk, Virginia, Newport News, Hampton, and a few other cities in that area, southeastern Virginia. And I grew up for most of my life in Norfolk, Virginia. And the big fun fact about that city is that it's one of the largest naval bases in the world, and also the largest in the U.S., at least that the public knows about. So there were a lot of Navy people that I knew about growing up, but there weren't a lot of Latinx people. So it's not something that I felt like I could really connect to, at least growing up. I had my family. Both my parents are immigrants from Peru. They immigrated here in their early 20s, and they both came here on scholarships to study. They always instilled into me like education was really important, hard work was really important. And we did go to Peru a couple times growing up, but it wasn't until I think later on when I studied in New York City or when I came here to California where I really felt like I could kind of connect more with my cultural identity being Peruvian American.
You mentioned a word that caught my attention. You mentioned Latinx. Can you speak a little bit about what that mean?
Instead of saying Latinos, you can say Latinx or Latinxes. And it's supposed to basically be this more inclusive, quote unquote, term that is gender neutral. Because not everyone identifies as male or female. There was actually this New York Times article that actually talked about why or why not the term should be used. This was a very recent article. I would recommend looking into it. It's like 2 weeks ago.
How do you feel, though? I mean, is it something that you use every day?
I like the term a lot. And I think it's because I do recognize that not everyone identifies as male or female. And I also recognize, too, that in tech especially, men have a lot of power and a lot of influence. And so Latinos kind of reinforces like that whole like bro kind of or guys, you know, kind of dominance, which is, I think, a society-wide thing, like the patriarchy and everything. But I think it just sounds better to me. And maybe it's just because of my generation, like being a millennial. I don't know if you're a millennial too, but like it just feels like being more inclusive.
I'm 33. So according to the numbers, I'm a millennial. I don't usually refer to myself as a millennial.
Yeah. I think in the article, they talked about the generational differences and how older generations would feel like Latinos is fine. Like there's nothing wrong with that. It feels more authentic. But then the younger, like it's becoming more popular, I think, among younger generations of, I guess, Latinx individuals where they feel like it almost sounds like a little more hip or something, right? So I think it's fine.
And that's fine. I mean, I feel that language is powerful and the way that we use words can shape how we communicate and how other people feel.
Mm-hmm.
However, as a native Spanish speaker, mm-hmm. it sounds terrible to me.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like nails on the chalkboard. I shouldn't say if you want to extend that logic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm an engineer. You're an engineer. We're logic-minded people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to extend that logic of Latino, Latina, Latinx, then it's amigo, amiga, amigex.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hanging out with my amigexes at mm-hmm. the store. Again, you know, it's something that it's a word that I choose not to use
mm-hmm.
just because to me it sounds made up. But mm-hmm. I guess all words are made up. So
mm-hmm.
you know, it depends what level of made up you want to embrace.
Yeah, there are definitely very strong feelings about it, and I can appreciate both sides for sure.
Sure, sure. But I find that even when I talk with my friends in academia that are professors and that have students that are millennials and younger generation, we actually had a very, very, very nice conversation a couple weeks ago around the Thanksgiving table about this, mm-hmm. about, hey, so do you guys use it in the classroom? And literally they laugh at me because they notice that, yeah, Hugo, we hate it too.
No, the students are using it, but...
Students are using it. The students are
okay,
using it.
But the professors aren't.
No. And that's the power of stories, right? The power that you have your own experiences because you grew up in Virginia. We all have a different experience. My mom was from Trinidad and Tobago, dad from Venezuela. I grew up in Venezuela. I immigrated here when I was 13. So experiences are different. And what's right or wrong for each one of us, it's going to be the... our perception of the world.
Yeah, and I think regardless of how we see the word, I think it's just good that as a community of Latinx or Latinos, we still, I think, feel some kind of connection, you know, regardless of how we see the word.
I agree. No, and thank you for clarifying that because a lot of my circle of friends are something American, Colombian American, Venezuelan American, Mexican American. And my closest circle of friends, we don't use the word at all. So for me, it's very educational, talking with somebody like you that embraces it and uses it as part of your identity. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast. I'm a strong believer that you can learn something new from anyone you meet. That is why every month I compile all the key learnings from this podcasting experience and summarize them in my monthly newsletter. I curate the resources we talk about, key learnings, books I'm currently reading, and give you recommendations on how to become a better Latino professional. You can sign up following the show notes or at latinoswhotech.com. Thank you.
So you were talking about coming to the Bay Area. I mean, you're a software engineer at Slack. Can you share with me a bit of what got you interested in computer science and software engineer? How did that spark came to happen?
It was very random, I would say. So I think in high school, I had been interested up to that point in either becoming a vet because I really liked animals or studying biology because I had a very influential and inspiring biology teacher. And if you have the right person telling you how amazing this field is, you're going to be interested in it. So that's how it was. But I realized in high school that if I decided to major in biology, I would basically be on kind of the medical track. And that's kind of what everyone was setting me up for. My parents wanted me to go on the medical track. The school wanted me to go on the medical track. And I got the chance to volunteer for a medical mission in Vietnam when I was still in high school through this organization, nonprofit called Operation Smile, which basically provides the free cleft lip or cuff palate surgery to kids in need across the world. And I was looking at the different surgeries happening, and I couldn't imagine myself doing that kind of work. It didn't click for me. And also, I was feeling the pressure from so many different parties, but it wasn't the path that I wanted. So even though I was really interested in biology, I started looking into another field that I was always a little interested in, but I didn't know anything about, which was computer science. Because my dad, he gave me these educational games when I was a lot younger, like Clue Finder. And it was all by the same learning company. I forgot the name of it. But basically, they provided these games, like the CDs you could pop into your computer. And you could play these games that would teach you math, science, reading, all these different topics. And I fell in love with those. And I fell in love with my computer because of those like educational games, surprisingly. It wasn't because of like typical games. It was because of these educational games. So even though none of my relatives, no one in my immediate family knew anything about computer science, I decided to look into it starting my junior year of high school. And I kind of fell in love with it. And unfortunately, what I did wrong is that I didn't seek anybody out. And I just like was learning by myself online, you know, and it was kind of a lonely learning experience. But soon after that, I think about after a year, or year and a half, I decided to attend my first meetup. I don't know if you've attended meetups before. They're really fun.
Yeah, there's this stereotype of the software engineer, the hermit, kind of an introvert person that keeps by themselves. Do you identify with that sense? Do you feel like you're an introvert or half and half? How do you feel?
I think naturally I'm more of an introvert, like a homebody. And I think that's okay that I play into that stereotype. But I also feel like I can be an introvert, and I've spoken to like large audiences of people like in a way that where I felt confident about it. So I'm not afraid of speaking up and like sharing my opinion when it needs to happen. Kind of like here, right? I feel like an introverted person probably wouldn't, you know, be on a podcast. It's just like, maybe it's not, maybe it is the right place, but I think I am introverted and I have taken personality tests that show me I'm introverted. But I think that when I need to be extroverted, I can be. And I think that's good.
That's awesome. No, it's great. And I'm actually in the same boat in the sense that I'm in the middle, introvert, extrovert, but I'm extremely comfortable talking to large crowds of people. It's sometimes that one-on-one conversation with somebody that you don't know as well. That's the one that I have to put some effort into it. So it's just interesting how we learn how we are, and that helps us define of what things we're into. So it just fascinates me, that whole personality theory.
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever taken any of the personality tests online, like the Myers-Briggs one is really popular. I think I'm an INTJ for that, which says I'm introverted, intuitive, thinking and judging. So very introverted, but also I like to take charge, apparently.
I'm actually ENTJ.
You're ENTJ. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm actually in the middle. So sometimes I'm like below the middle of the, more towards the I than the E. But we're the same thing. It's just, I just thought it was funny. So you're taking these courses by yourself. You mentioned you weren't seeking people out. So how did discovering meetups change that status quo for you?
Like I said, no one in my immediate family knew anything about the tech industry. None of my relatives did. I didn't have any support network, right? Because I didn't know anyone in the industry. So when I went to this first meetup, it was for Norfolk JS, which is basically Norfolk JavaScript. And so it was just a bunch of people who were interested in JavaScript and were living in Norfolk. So it was great. That was me. And before I went to this meetup, I had this perception of engineers, because like I said, I didn't know any. And I guess I didn't do enough Googling or research before then, or maybe I did. And I formed this perception that engineers were like geniuses. Like they were so smart and they could build things out of thin air. And I don't think it was a healthy perception to have, because in reality, engineers, at least when I went to that meetup, I discovered they were people like me. You know, they were just learning constantly. They were very down to earth. They weren't arrogant. You know, they weren't like how they're portrayed in the media sometimes, like as arrogant and like a know-it-all or just like very socially awkward. It wasn't anything like that. And I was very happy to realize that, because even though I think at the time I was a little socially awkward and I was introverted and I did play into that stereotype, I didn't want that to be sort of the reality of every engineer out there. And it really wasn't. So my mind kind of expanded because I actually finally got to meet other engineers and my perception changed like fundamentally.
I noticed that you got a master's degree. What drives you to get a master's? What's the motivation behind that?
My mom is getting her PhD right now, and my dad has a PhD and two masters. Like they really came to this country and worked their asses off to get to where they are today. And they always drilled into me and my siblings, like from when I was growing up, education is key. Like you must get a PhD in something, and it needs to be in medicine or law, preferably, because they didn't know what tech was, or they didn't really know about the tech industry. So I think it was partially that, I'm not going to lie. Like, I think it was some pressure because I love my parents. Like, I have a good relationship with them. Like, I feel close to them, unlike so many, I think, Americans do with their parents, to be honest. Like, I want to make them happy. I want to provide for them, like, long term. And so I think part of it was that, but part of it was also I didn't feel like I learned enough in my undergrad. And I wanted to sort of make my education piece of my life a little bit longer. I just wasn't satisfied, I think, after I was done with undergrad. But I also recognized that I didn't want to do a full-on PhD because that would take a long time. And I didn't want to do that. So I decided to do a little bit of the best of both worlds, I guess, and just go with the master's. And that's what I did. And it was very rewarding, but it wasn't necessary because the tech industry doesn't really, I think, care about pedigrees until later on in your career, maybe.
Well, at least you get the bragging rights. You can be master colonel.
That's not a thing, but...
And maybe someday you can become Dr. Colonel. But, you know, that's another conversation. You know,
yeah.
Maybe sometime in the future. So I get it. Both my parents were college professors.
Yeah, my dad is a college professor.
High level set of expectation is, I totally get it. Especially as the kid of immigrant parents, because, you know, they went through this struggle to get here and eventually they want to see you succeed.
Yes.
You know, if you ask any parent that's also an immigrant, they'll say that, oh, why do you come to this country? To give my kids a better future. I mean, that's the, or some version of that story.
Yep. And I think that's what makes the immigrant presence in the U.S. so powerful. And it's just unfortunate to see what is happening right now, currently, with the immigration process, with immigrants trying to come to the U.S. It's all very depressing, and there needs to be systemic reform, honestly. But I'm grateful that they were able to come here and, like, have a better life and provide such a better opportunity for me, you know, as an individual as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I came here as an international student. So I remember going to career fairs and talking to companies and being turned down as soon as they asked me, oh, do you need sponsorship to work in the US? Yes. Oh, here's your resume. Thank you.
Wow. And
just waving me off just because they don't do sponsorship. And again, I have this white face with green eyes. So again, people don't assume I'm Latino when they first look at me.
Right, yes.
When they hear the accent, then they know. And they say, Hugo Castellanos. Okay, this guy's not from Michigan.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I remember that. And the way that I see it is that, listen, if you're getting your master's or your PhD in STEM, in science and engineering, mathematics, as soon as you are walking to the stage to get your degree, somebody should staple a green card to your diploma. Like, please stay. Like, that's the... I'm naive. I look at it that way. I mean, look at the campuses. I mean, you look at the people getting those degrees.
Yes.
And a large chunk of them are international students. So you mentioned something that I want to touch on about the necessity of a master's or even a college degree. And let's keep it real, because that's what we do. How do you feel about boot camps? Because we both live in the Bay Area, so I see them all around me. These companies like Hack Reactor,
App Academy, Full Stack Academy, Make School, so many.
Lambda School we'll turn you into a software engineer in 3 months. So do you have an opinion about those programs or like that experience?
Okay, so just for some context, I attended a coding bootcamp myself, even though I have an undergrad in CS and a master's in CS. So it's a more atypical sort of situation. And the reason I decided to do that is because during undergrad, I was learning all of these more theoretical concepts of computer science, like data structures and algorithms, which are definitely a big plus that you want for the technical interview process. But in terms of like the actual work I was going to do as a front-end engineer, even at Slack, those kinds of skills are not necessarily needed. They're not required. So you don't need to actually have a CS degree to be a successful software engineer is really what I'm trying to say, right? And I think I realized that. And I was happy with my undergrad CS program, but I was also feeling like, how can I enrich sort of my skill set in a way that doesn't affect like me getting my undergrad? Because I know that's still important, but I will want to touch on like also the return of investment that a lot of colleges are not providing right now to students, I think is really important to touch on. But yeah, basically I went to this coding bootcamp. I ended up getting my first part-time job as a developer because of the skill sets I learned at the boot camp, not in my undergrad. I think the undergrad helped a lot, of course, but it was because of the skill sets, like the tangible things that I learned at the boot camp. And I think that because coding boot camps are more accessible in terms of timing and price, and also even like you can do it online, which I think CS programs are getting better at. But all of those things, especially the price point, I think that is like one of the best things that I love about coding bootcamps is the amount of accessibility you can get versus a 4-year CS degree that could leave you in a serious amount of debt. And the amount of debt that students incur in this country for a 4-year degree of any kind, regardless of whether or not it's in STEM, is ridiculous to me. And I think is it higher than credit card debt? I don't remember. It's just extreme. It's very extreme. And I think the education system in this country is just a little broken when it comes to pricing. I think there's a lot of discussion around this, but I just feel like you have to have a lot of privileges already to be able to even get a four-year CS degree and graduate on time and like also learn the like valuable skill set. So I think coding boot camps make breaking into the tech industry so much more accessible. And that's why I think that they can only grow from here on out. They might transform a little bit, depending on the needs of the tech industry, but I think they're here to stay.
Definitely. No, and I agree wholeheartedly on the opportunity cost aspect. And something that's been brought up before in the podcast is the whole, hey, I see everywhere that people need to be learning data science, machine learning, all these new skills. But I have a day job, so how do I go about learning these skills? Well, guess what? There's Udacity, Lynda.com, Coursera, plethora of learning solutions. And you just got to pick one and stick with it. I see there's a lot of tutorial-itis, like a disease, like appendicitis, but like tutorial-itis. So you get stuck just doing tutorials and tutorials and tutorials, but you never really build something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to build stuff.
So you got to build something, even if it's a to-do list app or something that you care about, like a Minecraft clone or whatever you care about. But yeah, the opportunity cost is huge, especially for people that are breaking into tech, people that don't have that privilege of a degree in engineering, but people that are, maybe they went to junior college for a technical vocational program. Maybe they never went to college. They just started working right away. So I think they're powerful. And I think that picking the right program for you is also key. In your personal opinion, what makes a good bootcamp program? What makes a bootcamp program successful?
I have seen coding bootcamps like be closed down for legal reasons and also for very sketchy reasons. Like there was this one famous example from this coding bootcamp in the Bay Area. I think it was called Coding House. And basically all of the students were having such a negative experience. They weren't being taught very well. It was kind of like a degraded house because they had to live in the house while they were learning in the bootcamp, which was a little bit unorthodox too. And none of them were having as much success like finding a job after the bootcamp as they thought they would. So that's on the extreme negative side of things. And because of like legal and also just a lot of negative reviews, they ended up closing down, which is good. They should not be like teaching people for profit and just churn out students like for that reason. I think at the other spectrum, like a very positive experience is where the coding bootcamp has partnered up with a third party to provide real job outcomes and like has tracked that over time. So you can actually see with some of these coding bootcamps that have partnered up with these third-party job tracking companies that 73% of the graduates of this program will find a job within 4 months. And then they have all that data for 6 months and 12 months. And that's what you want to see because that's real data. And at least you want to assume so. And I'm pretty sure it is because it's a third party, right? That and also good branding. So if it's a more well-recognized coding bootcamp that has a very good presence online, that's only going to benefit you because then companies have probably heard about it. So that's another thing. Three, and this is what I would recommend to anyone like looking for a coding bootcamp for sure if you can't do the other two, is look at the graduates on LinkedIn. Where are they now? Are they where you would expect them to be? And if you can, maybe there's a mutual connection, like reach out to one of them and just like hear their opinion. Maybe they had a horrible experience and that will dissuade you from ultimately attending that program. But maybe they had an amazing experience and they specifically talked to you about something that you feel like very good about. And then you feel like, oh, I should go to that coding bootcamp program. So basically just look for the actual real data. And I think you can find that really well with the ones that partner up with third parties and then LinkedIn.
I'm a huge fan of LinkedIn. And actually, Same. That's how we met. So, yeah. So I'm a huge LinkedIn dork. I just find it so freaking useful. I
mean, it's powerful. That's why Microsoft acquired it.
Yeah. The only thing that rubs me the wrong way is that their SDK is not open. So no CRM software can actually use LinkedIn data.
That's because the data is like what's driving a lot of their revenue. Like they have all this data.
I get the business reason. But as a user, I'm like,
Oh, gotcha.
Where do I pay?
You don't want to share
I'll give you $100 a month if you let me.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Look at that. Well, right now it's like $59.99 for the premium.
Yes.
And it's amazing. There's a bunch of tools that I love. Sorry. You got me started about LinkedIn. And
No, it's okay. I love LinkedIn.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. And I really like that point that you make about looking at the graduates of the programs, looking where they are at now, because you can see somebody's story according to what they put in their LinkedIn profile. Like, maybe they landed an internship at a smaller company and they moved on to a bigger enterprise. Next thing you know, they're at Facebook. Hacking away,
yeah.
And then you look at, their education section, and all they got is a bootcamp. So like, yep. Okay, how did this
That's
happen?
Super impressive, right?
I want to go buy you a beer and pick your brain out. How do you do this? It's definitely motivating. It's definitely motivating, and it goes to say that a lot of the skills that you need to do your job in a company, you don't learn them from school. You learn them from somewhere else. You know, a mentor,
real life.
Yeah, real life. I think I probably used like 5% of what I learned in school in my day job in technical product marketing.
No, that's totally fair. Mine is like 15, 10, something around that.
Yeah. Well, you're a real engineer. You're a real engineer. You're actually coding stuff away. And going back to that partnering thing, have you ever been to the LinkedIn Next Play events?
I think I've heard of Next Play. They have social events where the tech company come and basically try to recruit.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Like targeted at minorities in tech, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So African American, Latino, what? Latina,
yeah.
You know, women in technology, everybody. Mm-hmm. And I remember that I went to one of them and they had a Hack Reactor cohort. So it was fantastic because it's the people from the boot camp and they're having FaceTime with people from LinkedIn, Twitter, mm-hmm. Indeed, Yelp, like all the companies that were partnering up. Mm-hmm. So it goes to say that, you know, a place like Hack Reactor would probably be a great place to go just mm-hmm. because they're actually doing that engagement, you know, with companies. To
yes.
connect them with their talent.
Yes. And they're now part of a larger, actually, organization that's focused on tech education, which is called Galvanize. Galvanize acquired Hack Reactor. And then Hack Reactor had acquired a bunch of other boot camps, too, before they themselves got acquired. It's very interesting. I think a lot of big companies are kind of rising from this coding bootcamp sort of shift. So I think that it's an interesting space to watch because it is important to recognize that there are very alternative paths to like breaking into tech. And it's important that there are those paths open because tech is one of those fields that's going to influence all of us in so many ways that we may not even see yet. Like in the near future and just long term too.
Definitely. These applications that people are building, like Slack, are touching millions of people. Millions
exactly.
of people. I mean, they're changing how people communicate, work, and do everything together. So maybe this is a good segue to talk about Slack. Can you tell me what your current role is?
So I am currently a software engineer focused on the front end part of the customer acquisition team. So the customer acquisition team is basically top of the funnel marketing strategy, right? So we're getting folks who may never have heard of Slack or who are a little bit interested in Slack, but not sure. And maybe they want to try out the product. And we're trying to get them interested at the very top of this marketing funnel until eventually we can convince them throughout this funnel that they can become a paid user. Basically, at the end of the day, I work on Slack.com. Right? Because that's the top of the funnel for marketing. And I basically engineer solutions to entice users to try out Slack if they haven't ever heard of it before, like get them excited about what Slack is.
I'll come out. I love Slack. I love using it.
Yay!
The Tequeria channel is amazing.
I'm an admin.
Oh, you're an admin?
Yeah. I'm also the open source lead.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm in charge of their website, basically. Well, I help maintain it, but yeah.
Well, thank you for maintaining our safe space safe. I really appreciate
yes.
that.
Yes, I love Tequeria.
Tequeria, for the people that don't know, maybe you can tell us what Tequeria is.
So it's basically this organization for Latinos, Latinas in tech or Latinx in tech. And we have chapters in the Bay Area, LA, Chicago, and New York City. And also Austin. And we're hoping to expand to more cities. But basically, we're just trying to connect Latinx and tech together. And we have a Slack workspace. We have Twitter. We have Facebook. We're on all the social media platforms, honestly. We have a newsletter. We have our website. Check it out, techorea.org. I help maintain that. And
we'll put it in the show notes.
Yes, definitely join. There's so many good resources, I think, that we share.
And it's fantastic because I really like that functionality of Slack that you can build different channels for different interests. So one for intros, one for your cat pictures, one for speaking engagements.
Se llama mascotas.
Ah, me gusta. Mascotas.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I love that segmentation aspect of it. So how do you get to Slack then?
I think you had someone on your podcast before, Ronald Rodriguez, I believe. He's from Accenture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I worked with him at Accenture. I didn't work directly with him, but he was in the same office as me at the Liquid Studio in Redwood City. And so I was there for about a year as a software engineer. I had interned there before, decided to rejoin. And I decided that I think long term, I wanted to work at a company that wasn't consulting based, in all honesty. So as much as I liked Accenture, I just wasn't interested in pursuing like the consulting path, I think, long term, which I think is okay. And so I decided to focus on trying to work for a more sort of engineering driven company. And specifically, I was looking at companies where I really love using the product. So Slack was one of those companies I was interested in. Netflix. Google, GitHub, Spotify, LinkedIn. I was looking at all these companies where I was like, I love using your product. So
you were just looking down at your phone, at the first screen of your phone, and just looking at the apps. And
right,
like, I'm going to apply to GitHub, Netflix.
Yeah, all the websites, platforms that I use all the time, and I'm like constantly there. I was like, okay, let me just consolidate all of this and figure out if I can fit into any of it. So I applied to a couple of places. And I did a sort of thing where I looked at companies that did not use whiteboarding, because I was not a big fan of whiteboarding. And whiteboarding is basically that technical interview process where they grill you on a bunch of data structure and algorithm problems that are just not relevant to what you're actually going to be doing. So I had experienced that a lot and I just wasn't a big fan. So I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want to not have to do the whiteboarding. There's actually this GitHub repo called Hiring Without Whiteboards, and thousands of engineers have contributed. Well, not thousands, but it has thousands of stars on GitHub, and hundreds, I would say, of engineers have contributed to this list. And so Slack was on there because they don't do whiteboarding. They do system design questions, and it's more about how you work as a developer and like what your standards are as a developer. And they also have take-home projects. So I really like their process a lot better. And ultimately, in the end, I got through everything successfully and decided to join.
I really like the idea of a take-home project, actually, because I can actually just sketch it out in my own time. You get stuck, you go for a walk, you get a coffee, you come back.
Right. It's more realistic to like what is actually like how you would actually work, right? I think. But some engineers hate it.
It's a personality thing. That's key. That it simulates the real work environment. And I work at an office and we have an open format. But in all honesty, like those places are not really the most creative places. I find that the best ideas that I have are, first of all, in the shower. Second, when I'm going for a walk. So there's actually this walking trail around our campus that's where I go. Like when I'm stuck in a project and like, I don't know.
That's really good.
This, so just like knowing that, you know, that disassociated thinking, I think it's called, when you're not super focused
new
on something. When you let your subconscious take over and solve the problem for you, that's really powerful. So I'm happy to know that Slack, you know, encourages that through their hiring process a bit.
Yeah, speaking to like taking time to go out for a walk, I think it's really important to have those breaks when you need that moment of inspiration. I think it's really useful to put yourself in that new environment. It's a healthy habit.
Definitely. So what do you love the most about Slack?
Diversity. I think they really prioritize diversity early on. And there are articles out there that will show that Slack has been performing better, like numbers, you know, with numbers. Because I think data, you know, I'm very data driven. And so when I see the numbers, I can honestly quantify, yes, Slack is doing better in terms of diversity than comparable companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, in terms of not just like the women they recruit, because when we talk about diversity, sometimes we focus too much on like gender, but also like racial diversity too. And that was super important to me. Accenture had that, and I wanted it to be at my next company too, because that way I can actually bring in my true self. You know, I don't have to hide all these things about my identity if I'm in a place where there is another Latina engineer, or if there are other people I can identify with somehow. I remember one of my first jobs that I ever had in the tech industry. It was me and I think 9 other white males, older white males, and that was it. Now, thankfully, I didn't have a negative experience. They were all very nice. Like, I never felt any microaggressions, none of that. But that was like one of my first experiences. And it kind of felt like I was a little worried, you know, is this how it's going to be like all the time? Am I going to be the only one? And if you're the only one in the room who's like similar in that background, then you feel like you're representing like your gender. You feel like you're representing your race. And it's not a good feeling to have. It's like a feeling of isolation almost. I think if I had had a negative experience with that first job, like where they were being mean to me for whatever reason, like racially or gender wise, then maybe I wouldn't be in the tech industry, because I think the early experiences can really impact whether or not you decide to stay in an industry, right? Especially if you're underrepresented. So I had a great experience with them. I wanted to continue, though, to have an even better experience with a company that was diverse. And so Slack, for sure, I think does that pretty well. There's always room for improvement, no lie there. But as of right now, I think they definitely do better than most.
I'm really happy to hear that. In a personal note, have you met Frankie yet?
No, not yet.
Got it.
She's still onboarding.
No, I'm sure she is. I'm sure she is. She was really happy at Zendesk. I mean, she made a lot of good friends there. So she was, you know, she was a bit torn about leaving, but I'm happy she found the right opportunity, because as you said, you know, it's important to be able to bring your true self to work. Yeah. So no worries. I mean, it's one of those things that, I mean, I'm sure she's going to do great. It's just that I know her personality. Like, she has this bumbling, like super, she lights up the room kind of personality. So that's why I thought it was a good idea to connect you with her and with Adriana. She's a recruiter at Slack.
Yeah. I've worked with her before on a project, actually.
That's awesome. It's like I'm looking through my LinkedIn. Okay, how many Latinas do I know at Slack? Okay, Frances and Adriana. Now I know Frankie. Okay, let's connect them.
Oh, yeah. There are a good number of us. There are a good number of us. And I'm happy about that.
Me too. Hey, always room for improvement. We can use more.
That's true. Yes, always.
That's awesome. So I'm curious about what gets you excited about your job, like your day-to-day job. Like, what do you look the most forward to every day?
Yeah, and that was something that I wanted as well when I was looking for a job. Like, there's that phrase, like, what do you get up in the morning for? Like, why do you wake up every morning? Like, you want a job that motivates you, right? And I think definitely it's the impact of the work that I'm having. Even though I may not see it right away, I know that every little thing that I ship for Slack is going to have a huge impact, just because of how fast we're growing. We're one of the fastest growing enterprise startups in the world. And that's like a huge thing that I don't really appreciate, honestly, every day. But it's something that my work is directly related to, as we are the more public facing sort of content of Slack, right? Because anyone can access slack.com, but there's this barrier before you can kind of access the product, which is like Slack on web or Slack on desktop, Slack on mobile. Like, you have to create a team, right? So there's a barrier, but anyone can access slack.com and kind of get an idea of what Slack is. So in a sense, my team, and because we are one of the smallest teams, me especially, like, we all have this huge responsibility to uphold these standards of like what Slack gets communicated to all these users that could potentially be interested in Slack. Because the higher level vision I see of Slack is like being able to tap into every knowledge worker around the country and like having this new way, like giving them this new way of working, right? More effectively. And it's kind of that big impact, I guess, statement for me is like that. That's what wakes me up and makes me really motivated is that I know the work that I'm doing, even if I can't see it right away, is having a huge impact. And that's really exciting because we are in a very like high, fast paced like growth stage right now. And even though there are pains with that, honestly, because we used to be so small and now we're like becoming bigger and bigger every day. So there are pains with that, right? Because everyone is getting used to it, even in leadership and all the way down to like me as an engineer, an IC, an individual contributor, we all feel that growing pain. But at least for me, I'm still really excited about what Slack can become in the future and, you know, long term.
You're the gatekeeper.
Exactly. Top of the funnel.
I really like this analogy of the airport. So your portal, your company portal is like the airport of a new country. When you are a tourist in a new country and you're at the airport, do you feel rushed? Do you feel welcome? Do you feel at ease? How do they make you feel, the people that work there? I like to think of it that way. Like, do you feel that, oh, this place is kind of nice. Nice. I'm really looking forward to my visit now.
That's a good analogy.
Give it to the product marketing folks. This one's for free.
I think there are other websites for similar products, like where there's already an immediate barrier before you can get a sense of what the product is like. Whereas I think with Slack.com, at least we try to be more educational. So at least the user can get a sense of what it is. And then we also make it really easy to create your own like workspace.
Definitely. I don't know who said this quote. It was somebody way smarter than me about simplicity. That, you know, simplicity is not having a few things. It's taking apart all the things that don't matter till you can't take away anymore or something like that. I'm going to look it up. I'm just looking at the portal right now and it's like a why Slack pricing about us download. That's it. What else right. do you need? You know what I'm saying? Because like, first of all, like you're the decision maker. You're the one that's going to implement this thing. Okay, how much is it going to cost me? Pricing. Why Slack? You know, like what problem are you trying to solve? Really? Is email broken? Really? I really like that analogy of the whole onboarding, how there's these silos of knowledge in every email thread. And if you're new to a company, there's no way to acquire that knowledge unless you sit down with everybody in the team and talk with them. And we're all going to forget a little piece of that tribal knowledge that's on those threads. And I really like that visual that I saw of a new person joining a team that uses Slack. And you can just go through all the projects and read all the threads and see where the friction is, the deliverables, the timelines of things. So no, I think it's a fantastic tool. And we actually use it in my team for work. But it's more of a, if it's more of a travel tool, because we go to events all over the world, and it's just fantastic to share files and to have a channel for each project. So everything's in one place. I'm a happy user. So, you know, thank you for everything you do for me and my team.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's supposed to basically, I think, ultimately be the single source of truth for everything that you're doing with your team.
I love how that sounds. Single source of truth. I love how that sounds.
Collaboration hub is another one.
No, I like the truth one better. I like the truth one better. It has that copywriting power. That's something that should be like etched at the gates of a building or something. The single source of truth. I like it.
That's reminding me of the park, the Salesforce park. It's still closed.
Oh,
I don't know if you like the Salesforce Tower, mm-hmm. there's a park right next to it. And because they found this issue with one of the columns, it's been closed for so long now. It just reminded me of that. It's a bit sad.
Yeah. I still remember the Salesforce Tower back in Halloween when they turned it into the Eye of Sauron. Oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's perfect. It's perfect. No, the skyline has changed. I mean, after that, it's it's hard to ignore.
Oh, right. I know. It's the tallest tower west of Chicago, I believe. The tallest building west of Chicago.
That's awesome. No, that's San Francisco for you. So switching gears a little bit, and you've been amazing. You know, thank you so much for, you know, being here, and it's been a lot of fun. Do you have any influencers or news sites or forums that you frequent, either for programming or that you personally enjoy?
I have a crap ton. I mean, who doesn't, right? Like, there's so much information out there, and we're all trying to digest as much as possible to kind of stay in the know. That applies to me for sure. I think a few that I use with Chrome, I have this extension called Cycle Tab or something. And so basically, I can cycle through all the different new tab extensions. And those new tabs will feature different news sources. So like I have one for Product Hunt and it features like the top products on Product Hunt. I have one for GitHub and it'll feature the top projects from GitHub. I have another one for all design related news from Behance, Dribbble, etc. And I think I have one for like just generic news sites like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, etc. And so I have that almost subtly integrated into my like work life because it's just a new tab in Chrome. I'm always using my browser for everything, of course. So anytime I open up a new tab, I almost always get like a little sense of what is going on without too much extra work. So that's something that I use a lot. I also, of course, integrate stuff with Slack. So I have my own personal like Slack workspace and I have this app called Fast Voted. And so what it does, it aggregates all the different sites, kind of similar to what I did with New Tab, but different sources, because it's kind of hard to find a new tab for all the sources that you want to look at. But it integrates with Reddit, Hacker News, also GitHub, and a lot of other news sites. And it pulls out the ones that are trending a lot. And it will send me a message anytime one of them is trending, like a lot. That's really easy. And again, it feels effortless because I'm not doing any work. You know, I'm not trying to look for any article that I feel is important enough to read. I'm getting all the most like relevant articles. Maybe that's not the best way to do it, because there's also, I recognize like this issue where we're feeding ourselves the news that we want to see because we're kind of putting ourselves in our own bubble and we're not seeing news that may not be interesting to us, but may still be relevant, right? Like external points of views. So I do recognize that, but I'm pretty happy with my process right now. And I haven't been changing it. And then in terms of influencers, this is something that was not surprising to me, but was also just so amazing. My director of engineering is a Black woman. Her name is Arkwe Harris. And she was recently put in the top 50 women in tech for the US on Forbes. Huge thing. And she's on that list with huge influencers who are also women in the tech industry. And the fact that she was put on there, and I think she's on PTO now, actually. And it was not something she shared with anyone, but then someone found out because they were looking at Forbes and they shared it. And she's very humble, you know, first of all. And I've spoken with her a couple of times. And I also see this like strength in her that ideally I have at some point too, as I progress. Like, obviously she has way more experience than I do. She's a director of engineering. And I could honestly see her one day being CTO of like Slack or a similar startup, because she has this very like humble nature. And also she's very strong and straightforward about what she wants and how she sees things. So she's definitely one of more like my more recent influencers. I wouldn't say she's a mentor. She's just like an influencer and someone I aspire to be.
Of course. And she inspires you. She inspires you because she's done that journey. And hey, sometimes you have to see somebody walk that road to feel that you can walk it too. And that's the whole reason why I got started in this whole podcasting thing, is because, well, it's a great way of learning about different professionals and what they do. But it's also the people that listen to this, a lot of them are college students and also young professionals that are working for the first, you know, 5 years or less of their career. So it gives them a window of, hey, this is what the tech professionals look like. We're not geniuses. We make mistakes. Just to show them that, hey, it's possible. I mean, you can do it too. When we were born, we didn't have all the answers. We still don't. It's always interesting to find out who people look up to.
Yeah. And I think that definitely for just like Latinas in tech, or as a Latina in tech, I know that we are statistically like very rare. It's hard to find a Latina software engineer. And the Bureau of Labor reported in 2016 that of women in tech, only 1% identified as Latina. So we're like unicorns, And so I can even say, like, I'm a unicorn working for another unicorn because startup is valued at $1 billion or more. So we both are statistically rare, but I don't want it to be that way, right? Like, I don't want my existence in the tech industry to be like this rare and magical event. I want more Latinas to come and band together and like show that, yes, we can lead and like make the same innovations that other people have been doing too.
I totally see your next business card being Frances Coronel, statistically rare. That would be a really good name for your podcast too, by the way, statistically rare.
Oh, true. I mean, right now I have it being Tech Queens and I got the domain already. So I don't know if I can.
I love Tech Queens.
Oh, good. Está
buenísimo.
Good.
Okay. Está buenísimo. Me encanta. No, it's just a random idea. Maybe I'll call this episode Statistically Rare. No, or the unicorn at a I like unicorn at a unicorn too. The unicornception thing.
Yeah, it's a good phrase. I was working on my professional narrative with this women in leadership course I was taking. And I was just thinking about, you know, where am I in the industry? And that's where I am. I'm an engineer. I'm a unicorn, rather, engineering solutions for another unicorn. Like, that's actually who I am in a sense. But I don't want it to be that way, like I said, but that's the reality. And hopefully, you know, we can change that and show more people how easy it is, I think, in some ways to get into the tech industry if you work hard.
Right. Work hard and also find your place, because it's such a huge industry. It's just such a huge industry. And we need software engineers. We need hardware engineers. We need copywriters. We need
PMs, PMMs.
And that's also another one of the reasons why I love LinkedIn. What does a QA engineer do? Let me search.
Quality assurance.
No, of course. But I'm saying, like, if you know, you can just go to Quora.com or LinkedIn and look at open jobs for QA engineer and read the description. Just like, oh, okay, so you actually run tests on this, you do A/B tests on code, and like, oh, that's awesome. So like, here's another way of finding out what careers are out there.
Yeah, there's so many. And I think that, I don't know if this is the case, but when I was doing volunteering for the Hour of Code, I don't know if you've heard of that. It's like that 1 week event where code.org organizes all these volunteering sessions across schools around the United States and around the world to teach kids like how to code, basically. So it's an hour and they have all these tutorials. But when I was at a high school volunteering for that, I think a lot of them told me after the session that they thought that being in the tech industry meant you kind of had to be an engineer or like a leader or a manager. And they weren't as aware of all the other roles that come into play and are like equally important. So sort of destroying that perception, like you don't have to be an engineer to work in the tech industry. You can be so many other things. Like, I wouldn't say the possibilities are endless, but like there's a lot.
but there are possibilities. You know, they're not endless, but there are some. There are some. Frances, you've been extremely generous with your time. I really do appreciate it. I know you are in the middle of a crunch week. So I really
always No, this has been amazing.
And thank you. Well, you made it amazing. So I really appreciate it.
You did too.
Is there anything else in your mind that you'd like to share with this audience of young professionals curious about STEM and software engineering?
Try and do more with less. So something that I didn't realize early on is that there are so many networks that you can tap into and get resources from and also find jobs with. And I didn't really learn how to tap into those networks until much later on in my career. And by networks, I mean like networks like Techaria, finding resources like Conexiones, where you can hear the different perspectives. All these resources, I just didn't know they existed. And I didn't seek them out either until later on. So already, if you're listening, you're seeking them out, I think, if you know about Conexiones, but try to find other ones too and like expand your network so that you don't have to figure everything out yourself. Like, you can depend on the brains of thousands of other people by joining these networks and like getting all these useful resources and just like growing your skill set and growing your brand, your own personal brand, because you're expanding your network too by joining these other networks. So to note on that, definitely feel free to DM me on LinkedIn or you can email me too. I'll give Hugo my email. But
of course.
Yeah, join Techaria. It's That's a great. That's
and a download great Slack and download Slack.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, pay for Slack.
Pay for Slack. No, also the Tequeria Slack is amazing. I had to take it off my desktop because I was spending so much time in it.
Yeah, just like catching up on threads. That's something that happens.
Yeah, so now I just have it in my phone and that's it. You know, it's for that.
Yeah, it's good to disconnect for sure.
Definitely. It was awesome. Well, Frances, thank you very much.
Gracias, lo aprecio mucho.